the discussion that came up in the Gazette between Israel Asper's publication of an essay that he presented in Montreal, and your response in your column. These issues never came up in terms of the kinds of constraints that journalists feel on the ground within the occupied territories or within Israel to cover stories within a certain way or to not cover stories at all. When you hear about these issues happening there and you think about the kinds of constraints happening here at home, what are your thoughts about the abilities or inabilities of journalists to cover things yeah. happening within the occupied territories?
Well, you know, I certainly am not an expert in the Middle East. I've never even been there. My only experience with covering the issues is what's been going on at Concordia, which, as you know, is sort of a microcosm of what's, you know, tiny, tiny example of the conflict. I think what's interesting is, I think first of all, people have to understand how difficult it is to cover things when you're on the run, you know, when things are unfolding, you know, information isn't readily available, sometimes your life could be in danger. It's a very, very difficult job, and you're also under pressure, I would imagine. I've been in other situations. I was in Prague during the Velvet Revolution, and you know, so there's pressure from all sides who want to get their message out, and it's your job to figure out what the truth is. And when you're doing that by the, you know, you're flying by the seat of your pants, you're trying your hardest to do that, it can be very difficult. Now, that being said, I always find it shocking that that we have this idea that we just don't want to believe eyewitness reports for some reason. Like, if the report is coming from a person who's actually was there when something happened, when something blew up or someone was shot, you know, unless they're attached to some kind of so-called respected media outlet, we tend not to believe them. And but I think, again, because of technology, I think that's starting to change. And I think that, for example, human rights groups are encouraging people, are equipping people with video cameras so that they can start documenting violations that are happening right before their very eyes. And that's becoming a very powerful tool for these people who up until that point have been incredibly powerless. You know, no one would believe what they had to say. But somehow, once they had their hands on a video and they could document this and have proof, people are standing up and taking notice and saying, oh, well, maybe, you know, maybe there is a genocide happening in such and such a country, you know? Maybe we should check it out. So I think that, you know, I think there's often mainstream media journalists can be faulted for sitting in their hotel and watching CNN and filing their report that way. I'm not saying all journalists do that. I think there are a lot of very committed, dedicated journalists out there. But they are under constraints by their employer, you know, to file a story, file fast, file often, and you know, so it kind of restricts what they can and can't do, I think, if that makes any sense.
Well, I know there are many journalists that were here in April during the massive invasion of the West Bank, and they did not go into the West Bank at all. They filed from Tel Aviv. And there's no way to understand what's happening, really, or to report accurately, or to be honest about the situation if you are sitting in Tel Aviv and you're writing about what's happening in the West Bank. The worlds are entirely different. And I was interviewed by someone from CNN, and he thought it was very daring of himself to go to Jerusalem to meet me, which is fully Israeli-controlled. And he wouldn't even venture into Bethlehem, you know, a little further into the West Bank to see what was happening, and somehow he thought he was giving an honest report because he was asking a couple of people what the situation was like, and he really had no idea and wasn't there. And as far as attaching oneself to a so-called respectable organization in order to be heard, these so-called respectable organizations won't employ people that tell the truth, I've found. It's not in their best interest as far as the corporate media structure is concerned to have people that aren't towing the party line. And just simply to get out the truth is nearly impossible. And that's why I think it's incredibly important for people to take the extra step and put themselves on the line to really, really get out the real story. I mean, you have to come to the place and see what's happening in order to know what's happening. Yeah. You can't just ask people. And watching CNN, I mean, my mouth falls open when I watch what CNN is reporting. As I sit inside of a town and I see a CNN report about it, the spin that they put on it is outrageous, and they don't even begin to tell. Beyond that, they don't tell the full story. They don't even tell the partial truth. It's really outrageous what happens, and I think that it happens with regularity. And I mean, I think I'm very grateful for the idea of independent media. I mean, small as it is and struggling as it is, and it's our best hope at this point. And the more people we can get who are willing to come to places to see what's happening, or just to tell the truth, you know, about a situation, I mean, the more we have of that, then people can start having honest debates. I hear people sometimes discussing the situation, for instance, about Palestine when I'm outside of this place, you know, when I'm in New York, and I can hear from their conversation that they're getting their information to debate from places like CNN. So they don't even have the real facts to begin with to decide what their opinion is, or to figure out how they feel about an issue that's occurring, because they don't even have a part of the truth of what's happening.
And I think that's what the danger is of media concentration, and you know, not like what we need is a diversity of voices so that people have several sources of their news, and then they can read all that and make up their minds themselves. You know, I just think that is vital in our democracy, so that we can have lively debate. And you know, I write things often that people disagree with, and that's absolutely fine. I welcome that. You know, I want debate. I want I prefer it when it's done in a respectful, intelligent manner. But I just think that we also need to start raising more critical thinkers. I think the problem is we've become very apathetic in Canada. We take our rights for granted, and we just take whatever we read for the truth instead of, questioning things. And I think that's also vital in terms of our democracy surviving.
Well, let's expand on that issue, considering the liveliness of our democracy and coverage of issues in the Middle East. Sue, what kind of advice would you give to readers of the Gazette or readers of other newspapers published by these media empires that we've been discussing, like the Globe and Mail? And
I know that we take a lot of criticism, and rightly so. I mean, but there are ways of doing that. You can write letters to the editor. You can. There's the press council. I don't think intimidation or threats is the way to go. But I want the readers to know that myself and many, many, many of my colleagues, we are dedicated, committed journalists, and we want to put out a good paper. And I'm not just talking about the Gazette. I'm talking about the entire chain. And you know, it's very distressing to have our integrity called into question. And you know, once that, it's imperative that we have the trust of our community. And once that trust is shaken, it's very, very difficult to win it back. And you know, that is what we're trying so hard to hang on to.
you know, we don't have a correspondent in the Middle East. We don't have a correspondent, you know, it's a small paper. We don't, I think the farthest correspondent we have is Ottawa, you know, so, and that could be considered a war zone once in a while, too. But we're just trying to do the best we can under the circumstances and to reflect all voices of our community in the pages. And that's what I think is crucial, is that everyone has a chance for their voice to be heard. And, I mean, that's the biggest test of a democracy, isn't it? That we have to defend the freedom of speech of others, especially those who say appalling things and things we don't agree with. That's the biggest test right there. And if we could be a leader in the community for that, I think that's our role right there. And I also think that the role of journalists is just that, to question and challenge the assertions put out there by people in power. And I fear that we're not doing that enough. And we have to start, I think, being a little bit more forceful on that front.
Well, Kristen, hearing those words that Sue has to offer, what advice would you give to listeners or television viewers who see reports on events happening within the occupied territories?
Well, it makes me think about how that my voice, as someone who is here, who is seeing exactly what I see happening right in front of me, is called into question so much. Mm-hmm. But it's not called into question as much as the voice of a Palestinian who is here. The Palestinians here do not get listened to at all in the international corporate press. You know, really, it's the way that this is all set up just really illustrates the racism inherent in the corporate media structure, and that. My voice is more respected simply because I hold an American passport than the voice of a Palestinian who's living through what's happening here, which is a brutal military occupation. And as far as any sort of advice to give people, I mean, I feel that it's crucial for people to seek out alternative mm-hmm. sources of information. I mean, it's inherent in the power structure to keep people placated and to keep them with as little information as possible so that they're easier to manipulate. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to be easily manipulated, then you know what anyone must do is to struggle to find as many points of view as possible and to pay close attention to who is putting out the reports that they're reading and who the editors are and who owns the paper or who owns the television station and what their interests are, and to remember that a place like NBC, for instance, in the U.S. is owned by General Electric, which is one of the largest weapons manufacturers in the States, and that naturally you're not going to get a real story out of that particular corporation, and this kind of stuff is happening all the time. I mean, I think independent voices are always squashed, and but it's crucial that people seek them out nonetheless. And it takes a lot of effort mm-hmm. to find the truth. But I think that people must do it if they want to have any idea about what's really happening in the world. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to join us to further discuss these issues. Sue, I hope you have every opportunity to continue discussing and debating these issues within the Gazette. And Kristen, I hope you in the future do get that spot on CNN's nightly newscast.
Thanks, Gretchen.
Thanks, Gretchen. Wow. I would like to throw in just something so that people know that because there's no real coverage of the south of the Gaza Strip, that the residents of Rafah are being killed every day and that their homes are being demolished and that the Israeli military is shooting at families throughout the night, and most of the houses that are not demolished are being evacuated because the people have no sense of safety or security, and small children are getting killed every day, and that it's one of the worst worst disasters I've ever seen, and it's at the hands of the Israeli military and government, sponsored by the U.S. Government, who's paying for it, and that I hope that people can put a call out to whomever they can to request some real information about what's happening there, because it is an absolute crisis.